to cool the vehicle. We drove around Butler's neighborhood first, looking for any suspicious vehicles. There weren't any. Everything was hunky-dory. The only person around was an extra-fit white lady jogging up a hill, her skin glistening in the sun. I wore my bulletproof vest under my Houston Texans jersey, which was heavy and made me look like I'd gained a couple pounds, but I was playing it safe. After one more check through the hood, I pulled into Butler's driveway. Veronique was the first to get out of the SUV. She surveyed the area, and once she gave us the hand signal, Grace and I got out. The two formed a security perimeter around me as we made our way to the front door, Grace on my right, Veronique on my left. I'd long since turned in any semblance of masculinity I'd hoped to gain as part of this trio. It wasn't like I'd be worth a damn if someone started shooting at us or we were attacked by another super. I was fine with that. I didn't mind being the weakest link. The intercom came on just as we reached the front door. "Welcome, Gideon Caldwell. Please enter and enjoy the snacks in the kitchen. David Butler will arrive shortly. Estimated time of arrival is 3 minutes and 15 seconds. It was a very AI voice, a Lexus and Series bastard. I exchanged glances with the two superpowers, got confirmation, and we entered. After Grace and Veronique checked the foyer, we walked on a nicely polished wooden floor to an open-concept space kitchen that included a dining and living room area separated from the front door by a single wall. On the bar were some cookies and other healthier snacks, like carrots and ranch dressing. I received an email from David almost immediately, reminding me that he was running a bit late because of a prior meeting and that he'd be here in a couple of minutes. Hell yes, I was suspicious. I began looking around, lifting up any flower pot, trinket, or decoration I could get my hands on to see if we were being recorded. I checked behind the 120-inch flat-screen TV and moved each book on the bookshelf, just in case it opened to a secret room. Speaking of books, my fuck was this guy into sci-fi harems. Every book he had featured two women and a man on the book cover. What a played-out trope. Butler was also definitely a fan of space opera movies, and there was really only one space opera movie big enough to have posters that could cover all his walls. So I checked the posters, too. "There has to be something," I said to Veronique. At that moment, a few of the picture frames and silverware from the kitchen began to rattle. My heart skipped a beat. I glanced over at Veronique to see that she was just preparing ammunition and exhaled audibly with relief. The pictures fell out as their metal frames lifted into the air and joined the silverware, all of which hovered around her. "Good call, but don't kill him until we know for certain he's trying to kill us." Yeah, that sentence sounded strange, but as Jay-Z once said, "This isn't the life I chose. Rather, it's the life that chose me." I always liked that quote. I moved to the kitchen, still not able to discover anything. Damn, was I paranoid. I had a feeling this was a bad idea to come here. I tried to suppress the feeling, but it kept boiling to the surface. As she had done before, Grace spoke to me in my head.
"Relax, Writer Gideon. We are prepared if anything happens."
"I know," I thought back to her. "But this is just really freaky. Maybe we should have met the guy somewhere else. I don't know why we agreed to his demand to meet him here. It's his turf." The lock on the back door clicked, and we all turned to it, Veronique's makeshift weapons facing the back door as well. "Is he locking us in?" I asked. Still in control of her weapons, Veronique used her powers to unlock the door. We stood there for a minute, all of us poised and ready for something to happen. Grace was the first to fall. She was standing near a vent, and as she surveyed the room, she simply fell. I glanced at her just as Veronique fell, followed by her projectile weapons, which plinked against the floor as they landed around her body. I then realized I was growing delirious, that everything was starting to blur, that I could taste something in the air. The television flickered on as I, too, fell to the floor. I saw the outline of a man on the screen, speaking to us in a syrupy voice, as I lost consciousness. Chapter 16. Botched Interrogation. I didn't know where I was. The walls were all black, and there was nowhere to sit but on the ground. My mouth was dry. There wasn't a smell I could discern in the air, and I felt a migraine taking shape. I was the only one awake. Grace and Veronique were both passed out next to me. Taking a deep breath in, I glanced around, trying to get my bearings. My eyes were still slightly blurred. It was a large room, about the size of my garden apartment back in New Haven, but it was very spare. "Are we in some type of workshop?" I thought as I looked up at the halogen lamps shining down on me. My ankles and hands were cuffed together, and as I studied the cuffs, I saw they were connected to a long metal chain that went behind my back. The realization came to me like a knife in the gut. David Butler tricked us, poisoned us. Whoever this guy was, he definitely wasn't on our side. And I should have seen it coming. "Grace, wake up," I said with a scratchy voice. "Please." I looked down at her lifeless face. "Please, Grace. Please, one of you." They looked like they were asleep, both also chained to the wall but lying on their sides. I noticed that Veronique's chains were made of plastic, but there was still metal in the vicinity. All she had to do was use my cuffs. Poor planning on Butler's part. "Let us out of here!" I screamed, going with the panicked victim act.
"Shut the fuck up,"
came a voice from outside. The door opened, and a large man with a long gray ponytail and a white beard entered. He had the body of someone who kept relatively healthy, and his white beard almost reminded me of the Dos Equis guy. He was in a button-up shirt and a pair of striped black slacks. The only thing off-putting about his outfit was his black leather boots, big steel-toed numbers with enough grip on the soles to scale a wall.
"David. David Butler?"
"In the flesh," he said. "Now relax, and don't say anything until I'm done talking. By the way, it took you damn long enough to get here. No one likes waiting, but I'm glad you finally came."
His accent wasn't Texan, but it was definitely American. Maybe he was from the West Coast. I couldn't tell, but it really didn't matter. So I cast the random thought aside. My head was still spinning, and seeing the guy filled me with a toxic combo of fear and fury. Even though I was scared shitless, something came over me. The same sudden boost of confidence that had filled me when I first went toe-to-toe with Angel.
"You're fucking dead," I growled. "Once these two are up, I can't... Man, I don't know what they're gonna do to you. Fucking dead."
"Is that so?"
He opened a small metal case and withdrew a syringe.
"What the hell is that?"
I tried to pull my arms away.
"It's to make sure they don't wake up. You three are going to make me a lot of money."
I had to stall him. I didn't know how long Grace and Veronique would be out, but I had to try to keep Butler from knocking them out even longer.
"Why are you doing this?" I asked, changing my tone. "What purpose does it serve you to turn us in? That's what you're planning to do, right?"
"No, I'm planning to keep you for myself."
He moved to stand before me.
"Joking. I know, I know. It's not a great time to be teasing you. And no, I'm not the type of guy who would hold three people hostage. So, since I'm going to turn you over to them, I might as well be honest. This really is for the money. Plain and simple. You see this house?"
"House?" I glanced at the four corners of the room and made the assumption that we were in his attached guest house.
"It's not cheap to live here. The property taxes in Austin alone could buy a home in the Midwest. My last discovery is what bought this place. Maintaining it has taken its toll on my bank account."
"Delay him, Ryder Gideon."
"Grace?"
"Please."
But as it turned out, he was so eager to share his story that I didn't have to encourage much rambling on his part.
"You see, I was one of the software engineers who helped design the systems in their necks. Surely you've plugged in."
I nodded.
"Now,"
he said as he waved the syringe,
"there's probably some things you don't know about a government contract. One of those things is that everyone, And I mean everyone, works on a different piece, so no one knows what happens when all the pieces fit together. I was just working on the database stuff. We'll call it that because my guess is you aren't really up to date on different types of database software.
What makes you think that?
I've done my research on you, Gideon Caldwell. Self-published writer who worked at a Yale gift shop, huh? A degree from Southern Connecticut? From Rhode Island? All those things check out?
I nodded. I was experiencing a weird mixture of anger and fear. If I were writing a novel about this, which I technically was, I would find it hard to describe what was going through my mind at that time. I wanted to lash out at him, but I also realized we were trapped, and that if I wasn't able to delay him from injecting Grace and Veronique...
So, you're selling us back to them? I blurted out, hoping to keep him talking. He smirked.
I'm selling them back to the researchers, not you. You're going to be charged with, I don't know, how many federal crimes? But that's not really my concern. In fact, I might just let you go. If you beg for it. Yeah, I've never seen someone beg. I think that would be kind of interesting. Then again, I might just keep you until they get here.
I swallowed hard. I knew there would be no justice for someone like me. And as I considered this, of all fucking times, a quote from Hunter S. Thompson came to me. Justice is not cheap in this country, and people who insist on it are usually either desperate or possessed by some private determination bordering on monomania. Nope. There'd be no justice for my ass if the FCG got me. Have you told them yet? I finally asked.
Not yet. I have to make sure I have leverage first. I mean, clearly I do. But who's to say they won't send more superpowered individuals after me when I tell him I captured these two? I have to play this smart.
How did you find out about us? Did you really read my book?
You've got to be more careful next time. Did you honestly think publishing a book about all this would make a fucking difference? I just stumbled upon it. Honest to God. Which is what makes this even better.
What do you know about Mother?
Mother?
He considered that for a moment.
Haven't heard of her. Why?
Never mind.
Why are you asking me about Mother? Who is that? What am I missing here?
I hadn't written about Mother yet. I wanted more details before I did that. And since I had only seen a picture and pieced together very limited details about her from what Grace and Veronique had told me, I wasn't ready to talk about her in my series. I said, never mind.
Never mind my ass,
he said and grabbed Grace's arm.
Do you know how long this is going to put her out? Could be days.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. And after I get to the other bitch, you're next.
A powerful sense of anger welled up inside me. You're going to regret this, I snarled.
Oh, I doubt that.
And almost as if on cue, Dorian Gray stepped into the room. Chapter 17. She's with us. David Butler went from tough to about to shit his pants in a matter of seconds. He stumbled backward, the syringe in his hand his only weapon. Dorian observed him for a moment, an indecipherable look on her face. Her hair was a mess, and she looked a little wobbly, but she also looked pissed as hell. Damn, did she look pissed. The punk rocker placed a finger in her mouth, took it out, and traced a long line in the air. Boiling purple energy formed at her fingertip as she continued the line. Once it was complete, she brought her hand back and flung it at David Butler. The line of energy sliced right through his neck, cutting his head clean off and cauterizing the wound at the same time. Her blast slammed into the back wall, fizzing and sparking, his head bouncing away somewhere to the left. I was going to be sick. I had seen dead bodies before. Hell, I had helped to move a few. But seeing a head bounce, roll, and then stop so it was looking right at me, mouth agape, was too much to handle.
I gagged and was barely able to stop from vomiting. The smell of singed flesh was terrible, nauseating.
Holy shit!
With a deep breath in, I steeled myself, fully aware that I was next. Dorian approached me, and as she did, she placed her finger in her mouth again. I turned away from her so that the chain holding me to the wall was now visible. I wasn't whimpering or begging for my life. I knew this was it, and there was nothing I could do. Dorian Gray was going to kill me. A small explosion beside me produced a wave of heat against my exposed hands. I felt my chain fall away and glanced around to see that she'd saved me instead.
"Stand up,"
Dorian said, her voice hoarse. I did as I was told. My legs and wrists were still bound, but I could at least move. Fight back? The thought, my own, was one of the dumbest I'd had in a while. I didn't need to look at the severed head across the room to be reminded of that.
"I want answers,"
she said. "Answers?" I tilted my head as I took her in. I was still shaky, and whatever noxious gas Butler had used against us had my head doing somersaults. "Grace," I thought. "Please, if you can hear me..."
"Just a little longer. Stall her."
"What answers do you want?" Dorian took a step closer, sizing me up. The heels of her boots brought her to about the same height as me.
"Why did you take them?"
"Them?" I asked, looking at Grace and Veronique. "I didn't take them. Well, they took me." Kind of strange to say it like that, but it's the truth. Grace showed up on my doorstep. Veronique tried to capture us and later joined us once she found out what we were doing.
"What are you doing?"
"We're putting an end to the experiments that created people like you and people like them," I told her, my confidence wavering. It was odd to tell someone that you were trying to stop their species from flourishing. I decided on a different approach. "Let me rephrase. Creating superpowered individuals in a lab to serve the federal corporate government is an abomination." Her brow furrowed.
"How do you know we serve them?"
But I was so impassioned by what I was saying that I missed her question. "It's against the agreed-upon social norms of humanity. Just think about it. Grace was kept in solitary confinement most of her life. Veronique and you were both trained to be killers. But they'll retire you once they develop a better version. Can't you see what is going on here and how it's wrong?"
"My original question was, how do you know we serve the FCG?
"I don't. But they funded your creation, and..." I looked at her unsteadily. "Who do you serve?"
"We serve Mother."
There's that name again, I thought, taking in her blank expression. "And Mother must serve someone. I'm not saying you're delusional, but there's no way Mother is getting funding from the FCG and protection by one of America's elite security companies without catering to a higher force." She didn't say anything, and for a moment we just stared at each other. "You seem like a nice enough person," I finally said, clearly talking out of my ass. "And I think you get what we're trying to do here. We're trying to expose these experiments and put an end to them. I'm a writer, and I've already written 2 books about these experiments. Well, they're novellas, but still."
"How can you care about something you know nothing of?"
"I know plenty about it. Grace, you know what her ability is, right? She put everything into my mind. She gave me the ability to see and feel what she went through."
"Grace?"
You call her Sabine. Her new name is Grace."
"Okay. I did not know new names were possible. How can you trust her?"
"I trust her because she trusts me. Same with Veronique. Not a week ago, she was trying to kill me. Now, I fucking love having her around. Bygones be bygones. What I'm saying here is..."
"Yes?"
I raised my chin slightly, trying to look as leader-like as possible. "Join us. Let's bring an end to this together. Or go off on your own. Leave Mother."
"Join you?"
Dorian paced back and forth for a moment. She glanced from Veronique to Grace and back to me.
What happened to your face?
She finally asked me. My face? I touched the scar on my cheek. That would be Angel. Know him? She raised an eyebrow.
You survived an encounter with Angel?
I survived too.
How do I know they won't kill me when they wake up?
Because they listen to me. I listen to them too. We listen to each other. She stared at me skeptically. Look, this isn't some situation where I'm the alpha male and these two obey me. Fanboy fantasies aside, I'm kind of the driver of the group. I write the books and do the driving. If anyone is the alpha, it's Veronique. Lateral leadership. That's what I'm trying to say. We work together. We live together. We do everything together.
You're like a family.
We are. Hell, I basically abandoned my real family when I took off with them. My throat tightened. That was something I wasn't proud of, something I'd never be able to rectify. I didn't want the FCG going after them. The less they knew, the better. Still, I needed to call my mom at some point, but the longer I put it off, the easier it became.
And why are we here at this house?
Dorian asked. The guy you, decapitated claimed to have information for us. He may still have information somewhere on his computers, but what he was really trying to do was sell us back to the FCG.
To Mother? Why would she spare this guy's life?
I don't know. Maybe she doesn't know about him. He didn't seem to know about her. Anyway, he said something about being out of money and needing more. He read my book. Yep, I fucked up by not coming into this situation the right way. I should have been much more careful. She smirked.
You talk a lot.
Sorry. You could seriously kill me in a matter of seconds, so I'm a little nervous. Also, I'm sorry I punched you back in Louisiana. My mistake.
I'm not gonna kill you, and that's fine. It was a natural reaction.
If you aren't gonna kill us, what are you gonna do? Are you going to turn us in? Dorian looked down at her hands, nodding slightly to herself as she considered her options. Finally, she locked eyes with me and offered a thin smile.
No, I'm going to join you.
Chapter 18. Pizza and Gruesome Jokes. I shit you not, that was exactly how our conversation went down. Dorian Gray promised she wouldn't kill me and said she was going to join us. Then she came over to me, licked her finger, and placed it on my handcuffs. The first one fizzled and snapped, followed by the second. She then went for the cuffs on my ankles. Damn, your ability really is activated by your saliva, I said, still not believing she'd flipped so easily. I was naive, sure, but I wasn't naive enough to think that someone who had tried to kill us just a few days ago could switch sides so easily. Then again, that's exactly what happened with Veronique. So I relaxed my guard some. Not that I could have done anything. If it's tied to your saliva, how do you kiss someone? Dorian shook her head.
Are you serious?
It's an honest question, I said as she removed the final cuff. Damn, if it felt good to be using my arms and legs again.
I don't normally kiss people, but I can tell you that I don't explode the fork or melt the glass if I eat or drink, so it has to be intentional. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. Sorry, I'm an idiot. She cocked her head.
I thought you said you were a writer.
Same difference?
Dorian didn't laugh at my joke, but she should have. Writers are a weird breed of human. If you give them any amount of power, it goes straight to their head, something I've seen in the indie writer community since I became part of it. Suddenly, they're giving out writing advice or lecturing people on what constitutes good writing, or writing books on writing, or trying to keep up with the famous drinkers of the past. Shit, even I had let the little bit of fame I got from releasing How Heavy This Axe go to my head, and that was just after 50 sales over a 3-week period. One of the drunker authors I know celebrated after just 10 sells in a 5-week stretch. The dude got so shwasted he ended up on some country road outside Kansas City riding an ATV with his shirt off, screaming about how he was the next William Gibson, until local law enforcement caught up to him. And don't get me started on writing and drinking. That never ends well. While it has resulted in some of the best books ever written, the lives of those who write them usually pale in comparison to their books. Me? I'll stick to banging superheroes.
That's one way to put it, Writer Gideon.
Grace, are you ready to stop pretending to be dead?
I'm still passed out. This is the part of myself I've imprinted on you.
You're kidding me.
Why are you looking at me like that?
Dorian asked. Sorry, voices in my head. Grace, we need to talk about that. How much longer until you wake up?
I can't predict these types of things.
You did in Stamford.
Sooner than later. Also, regarding Dorian, I will take a solid look at her and see if her intentions are true. If not, Veronique will kill her.
Hey!
Should we take a look around the place?
Dorian asked.
That is why you came here, right?
Right, but I don't know how we're going to get into Butler's computer if it has a password. I literally know nothing about him. I took another gander at the headless body. Shouldn't have done that. I started to dry heave and had to go outside to throw up what was left of breakfast. Just as I had predicted, we'd been in Butler's guest house. Most of it had been gutted and the bottom converted into a workshop, which was where he would have kept us if Dorian hadn't saved our asses. Dorian led me along the winding path that took us to the back door. We slid the door open, and after making sure there was no toxic gas in the living room and kitchen area, and by no means was this a scientific study, I simply sniffed the air and opened some windows. We headed to the fridge. "I figured you were thirsty," I told her as I pulled out two ginger ales. She took a sip, and her eyes went wide.
"This is really good."
"Definitely some good stuff." I started searching the kitchen for food. I was hungry, and I eventually found some snack bars in a walk-in pantry. I wolfed down two of them, figuring it was good to eat something, especially after what I'd just been through. We continued upstairs and found that Butler had an entire room dedicated to virtual gaming. He also had a pair of guest rooms, and his master bedroom had been recently cleaned, evident by how perfectly the sheets and blankets were pressed. Did he have the place cleaned before we came? Butler really was a weird guy, but he had crossed the wrong people. I wished I could have learned more from him about this experiment and how he came to figure it out. It would have been great for Mutants in the Making 3, but his sudden death put a damper on that idea. Dorian had killed him the way someone swats a fly. It was almost sad how quickly he died. I guess it would be better to go that way, having your head cut off. Better than getting tortured, shot a couple times, burned to death, or boiled in acid. Personally, if someone gave me a choice of how to die, I would choose to freeze to death.
What are you thinking about?
Dorian asked. Weird ways to die, and which I'd pick if given a choice. Sorry, my mind is still, spinning a little from what happened back there. Hope you understand. I'm not always this crazy. Scratch that. Yes, I'm usually this crazy, but it comes with the territory.
And what territory is that?
The territory of being a writer? I don't know. She shrugged.
You sure blame a lot on being a writer.
It's a sickness for which there is no cure but death. We checked out the bathroom, which was super nice, and another little study he had adjacent to one of the upstairs bedrooms. Jackpot. I couldn't believe my luck. Like my cross-dressing uncle, David Butler liked to print everything out, from email correspondence to Google Face Maps to just about anything he could find online. And I meant anything. Dude had even printed out porn, as well as some tasteful hentai prints, most notably some ladies versus butlers and R15 pics. All the info we need is in this room, I told her with a grin.
You think so?
We should just stay here tonight. I'll go through all this and see what I can uncover. We can get on the road tomorrow. I don't know how long we should stay here, but considering that there's a dead body in the guest house, I'd like for it to not be very long. In fact, once Grace is well again, I'll probably send her to the neighbors to mind wipe everybody.
mind wipe.
I don't know how much experience you have on the outside, but I'm guessing you're kind of like Veronique. You live in the facility, and if they need you, they send you out. Is that assumption accurate? She nodded. Well, as you'll probably come to realize, you can't just go around showing off your superpowers out in the real world. People take notice, and as much as I want to expose what's happening, I'd like to not have it done in a 21st century media frenzy kind of way. Dorian looked at me funny. She really was cute, her black hair framing her face and her I'll-put-a-boot-in-your-ass style. I didn't have much experience with women who looked like her. There weren't many punk rockers in Connecticut. What? I asked after she didn't say anything.
You're publishing books about this, but you don't want there to be any media attention? How are you going to get more people to know about it? How are you going to get the right people to know about it?
Those are all valid points, and I'm probably going about this the wrong way, I said. We took the stairs to the bottom floor, where we found Grace and Veronique in the living room, watching us suspiciously. The metal on the floor started to twitch as it lifted into the air. She's with us, I told Veronique.
Grace already explained that to me.
The tension in the room was palpable. I held up my palms. Let's just keep it cool here. I know you two have fought each other before.
Ryder Gideon, I think we should order some pizza for Dorian. That would probably make her happy.
All of us looked at Grace in time to see her morphing into David Butler and speaking in his voice.
I sure would like some pizza, but I can't eat any because I can't digest food any longer.
I looked in horror from Grace to the other two superpowereds. Veronique and Dorian both started laughing as Grace did her spot-on impression again. If all it took was pizza and gruesome jokes to make them happy, then we weren't as bad off as I thought. Chapter 19. Broken Bird's Nest.
Are there cherry blossoms in Texas?
Grace asked me as we set the pizza on the table. We ordered two pies, actually, this time from a local place that specialized in Chicago-style pizza. I wasn't a big deep-dish man, but I wanted to give them a taste of Chicago. I think it's too hot for cherry blossoms, I told her, handing Dorian a plate. Veronique had already eaten, which was creepy to say, considering that her meal consisted of draining Butler's decapitated body. But I suppose a meal is a meal. She'd also had a slice of the deep-dish pizza, which she didn't seem to enjoy. Grace and Dorian, on the other hand, pretty much finished one whole pie themselves. There wasn't a lot of banter between them yet, but I figured this would change after Grace and Veronique introduced Dorian to their favorite TV shows. Or vice versa. There was really no telling how Dorian's personality would affect the other two. One thing we did finally get around to talking about was her teleportation ability. When asked how far she could teleport, her only response had been,
"Far."
It was true, she could sketch something and teleport there, but it was difficult, and it had to be an exact replica. This was why she had a smartphone. She would look at pictures on Google Face and use them to make her sketches. Speaking of sketches, Grace had given Dorian's paintbrush back, much to her delight. She explained that using the paintbrush just felt better to her, even though she could technically perform her ability just by licking her finger. Or licking anything for that matter. While we'd been waiting for the pizza, she showed us how her saliva could ignite a piece of paper. It was one of the weirdest abilities I'd ever heard of. Things cooled off the rest of the night. The three watched TV downstairs while I went through Butler's papers. Remembering that Grace could touch objects and know something about their history, I called her up to the room after an hour of going through things, and she started helping me. "How are you doing?" I asked her. She was in my clothing again, her hair braided over to one side.
"I'm good,"
she said as she looked through a stack of papers.
"We were watching a show about a home in Santa Fe. I really want to visit there."
Pictures of Santa Fe appeared in my head, and I immediately recognized them as being transplanted. They were just too fresh for me to have seen or generated them on my own. "Cool. We'll try to stop there, then," I told her.
"Thanks. Maybe there will be cherry blossoms."
Probably not. But there will be cacti. Grace approached me and placed a hand on my cheek.
"Your beard is getting too crazy,"
she said sweetly. "I'll see what I can do about that. but riders and beards go hand in hand.
It looks like a broken bird's nest.
I guess that's one way to describe it. She touched the computer table and her eyes flashed white.
I think we'll find something if we keep looking. I have a very good feeling about that.
I sighed as I took her in, admiring her Scandinavian model form and the way my pants and low-cut top clung to her curves. You are so interesting to me.
I think you're interesting, too,
she said and turned to me, wrapping her arms around my shoulders and leaning in to kiss me.
Want to do it right now?
Shit, yes I do, but... I took a deep breath. We've got to keep searching.
Fine.
As if she'd never initiated the offer in the first place, she returned to her papers.
Have you checked your sales for today?
Not yet. Well, I mean, this morning I did, but not since. I've been a little preoccupied. I'd also like to talk to Luke and catch him up on what's happened. I'd put my phone on silent and hadn't looked at it in a while. It took us at least another 30 minutes of going through piles of paper and flirting with each other whenever we got close, but we eventually found something beneath a removable floorboard in the closet, a suitcase sealed with a chain. That's an archaic way to seal something, especially for someone who uses databases. But maybe he was onto something, I thought as I brought the case downstairs to Veronique. Think you can open this? The chains fell off, and I thanked her. Veronique and Dorian were still watching something about rebuilding a home in Santa Fe. Dorian sat with her hand covering her mouth as she awaited the final reveal with rapt attention. I couldn't help but probe. You actually like this, Dorian?
What's not to like?
She said without taking her eyes off the television.
I would love to build a house and have the room that I want and everything my way. Yes,
Veronique said, nodding.
Everything your way. Everything everyone's way. That's what all this is about. The only people who won't get their way when we're finished are them.
Dorian nodded in agreement.
Gideon told me everything. I still need to think about some things, but I know what you guys are doing is... it's the right thing to do. I remember the others. I remember the others, too,
Veronique said in a low voice. Great, I said, and headed back upstairs. I secretly wanted them to bond, especially for Veronique's sake, so rather than butt in, I felt it best to leave them alone and go see what Butler was hiding. Today was proof that things could change very fast if we got sloppy, and there might not be a Dorian in the car next time. Hell, if there hadn't been a Dorian this time, our little narrative would have ended. I couldn't forget that. I really needed to keep my head down and not do any more stupid shit. Famous last words. As soon as I got back to the study, I set the suitcase on the table and opened it to find a single manila envelope that read, Facilities. Inside the envelope were several folders, a treasure trove of information. There were 5 main locations, each with their own folder, including the one we had destroyed in New Haven. There was another in New Mexico, 2 in California, and 1 in Washington State. Each folder had a series of schematics of the facility. Known contractors and food vendors, documents with an acronym AEFL stamped on them, as well as other details, such as estimated staff numbers. Can you look through all these and save their images to your memory? I asked Grace.
Definitely,
she said as I handed her the papers. We'll go to New Mexico tomorrow, to Santa Fe, and plan our next assault from there. Now that there are 3 of you, this will be a lot easier. Boy, did I turn out to be wrong about that. Of course, there were some sexcapades that night. Grace and I had to celebrate the fact that we were still alive, and what started out as a cuddle session quickly morphed into both of us pleasuring each other and then going at it, Grace switching her forms as we changed position. At one point we were doing it doggy style, and black lines began to stretch across her skin. Zebra stripes? I asked, breathless and losing steam fast.
Is it okay?
She asked, looking over her shoulder at me. Her face now belonged to that of a famous pop musician. It's different, I said as I slid in and out of her, watching the zebra pattern on her ass change color. She got back on top and morphed into Hallie Lawrence, considered one of the hottest actresses around. Even odder, she had been in some of the newest X-Men movies playing Jubilee. I didn't know if Grace had pulled this from my psyche, but I was definitely into it.
You like that?
She asked, her voice now that of the famous actress.
You want it harder?
Sure. She started gyrating vigorously, like she was trying to screw in a giant bolt with her hips. No pun intended. My proof of writerdom was by no means giant. Hell, it was average at best. But the way she was grinding into me made me feel like it was larger, like I was the Dirk Diggler instead of the John Hodgman of sci-fi writers. Once I finished, I rolled to my side, breathing heavily. She placed her hand on my chest and curled up next to me. It was a proper ending to a potentially horrendous day. I was suddenly thirsty, so I put on my shorts and went to the kitchen to get some juice. Veronique and Dorian were still watching television, the light from the screen casting blue arcs over their faces. They both stared at me as I entered the living room.
He's thinner than I thought,
Dorian finally said, as if I wasn't there at all.
His clothing is a little bulky. I think he used to be a bit heavier, but lost some weight and still has the same clothing from before.
Veronique offered me a rare smirk.
You have time for more?
More what? I asked, assuming she couldn't possibly mean what I thought she meant. Veronique returned her focus to the television, acting as if she hadn't said anything. Dorian simply laughed as she waved me away. Chapter 20. The First Grenade. I decided to cook breakfast the next morning. Butler had plenty of food, so I was able to make a pretty good spread of eggs, bacon, toast, English muffins, and grilled potatoes. I was no Chef Boyardee, but it didn't take much to whip up a decent breakfast, and judging by Grace and Dorian's response, they liked it too. Veronique, as usual, didn't eat anything. She did, however, enjoy her coffee. We all sat around the kitchen table, and I showed them my sales for the previous day. Damn, did I like seeing that sales dashboard. I also discovered I'd been selling other books as well, most notably How Heavy This Axe, which gave me the impression it may experience a comeback. By the mercy of the gods, fuck yeah. Naturally, having an open laptop led us to watching some funny TwitchTube Red videos that involved cats.
It would be so nice to own a cat,
Grace said.
I would train it to speak.
Train it to speak?
Dorian considered that for a moment.
I mean, I suppose you could do something like that.
I never tried communicating with an animal,
the telepath said.
But I believe it is possible. Maybe we can walk around the neighborhood later and find an animal. I would love to try this.
Sounds like that would be a pretty funny trip to go on, I said. What about you, Veronique? You into it? Veronique reached for a single piece of bacon, examined it, and took a bite. Her eyebrows rose, and she nodded.
It would be nice to get out,
she said, and reached for a second piece. I went to the kitchen and brought back more grilled potatoes, dishing them out on their plates, listening as Grace played a video of a baby pug getting tickled. The window shattered as a grenade sailed into the living room, spewing smoke as it bounced off the sofa. A trained soldier, Veronique's first response was to strip every bit of metal she could from any object in the room and fling it toward the back windows, blasting out a ton of glass and letting in more air from outside. Then I heard the helicopter.
Get Gideon!
Veronique shouted to Grace as she focused on the attack point, waiting for whoever had struck to make their next move. The next move came in a wave of bullets, all of which were stopped in midair.
Now!
She yelled. I was just starting to duck when Grace grabbed my hand and pushed me toward the garage. One glance over my shoulder and I saw Dorian teleport away just as more bullets cut into the living room. We can't leave Veronique, I said stupidly to Grace, my voice partially muffled by the noise around us. Just as she had done at the hotel in Stamford, Veronique turned the floating bullets back toward the helicopter, but she didn't release them yet. More smoke grenades soared into the living room and were quickly tossed out by Veronique. She had the look of a mad conductor on her face, waiting for the helicopter to get into position so she could unleash her metal orchestra. And release it she did. As the bird finally got into view, she hurled all the waiting bullets, hundreds of them, at its windows. They plinked ineffectively off the glass, doing nothing to stop the chopper. A determined look on her face, Veronique pulled the railings off the windows and spun them toward the helicopter blades. Upon impact, the machine tilted sideways. The pilot tried to right it, which only tilted it in the other direction before it finally spun down. Just as the helicopter crashed into the backyard, the front door of the home exploded open.
Gideon, listen to me. You have to get down and get away.
Grace grabbed the sides of my head and looked me in the eye.
Do not make me take over your mind. Just take cover and let us try to handle this,
she said, speaking fast. Her grip around my skull tightened, her thumbs digging into my temples.
I'll be here, always.
Got it, I said as she led me down the hallway and into the garage, where I found a place to hide. I could hear Veronique tearing metal off walls and ripping apart anything else that had metal in it in an effort to stop the onslaught. This was followed by the sound of more bullets. The garage was large, and there were a couple motorcycles in the right carport. As Grace left me, two men in black body armor burst inside, their guns trained on her. And then they became our men. Their eyes flashed white, and they returned to the melee, now fighting on our side. Flip as many as you can, I thought to Grace. I felt like a coward for hiding in the garage. This seemed to be the perennial problem for me regarding our little association. I had no powers, aside from the fact I could write quickly, which was anything but a power. Can you imagine a superhero whose power it was to write quickly? That one wouldn't have even made it to the desk of Stan Lee's assistant's assistant. So, like a coward, or possibly like anyone with no combat training and no weapon skills who was fully aware they were in the middle of an assault led by people with real abilities, I hid behind the goddamn recycling container. Whatever was going on outside sounded like an Iraq war movie. I was shocked that MercSecure and the FCG had brought this much firepower to a West Austin neighborhood. Another helicopter announced itself, and I heard more weapons being fired. The creak and crunch of metal, men yelling as their own team shot back at them. The garage door caved in, and I almost jumped out of my skin. I tried to get as low as I could, and even entertained the idea of putting the recycling container over my head, which was stupid in retrospect, but seemed totally viable in the moment. Hey, it worked in Metal Gear Solid. As I peeked around the side of my hiding spot, I caught a glimpse of who had punched in the garage door. Angel. He looked nearly the same as before, well-built, brown hair tangled in his face, lantern jaw, and dark eyes. But there was something different about him, too. His skin looked bad, which I attributed to the explosion on the rooftop of the Rose Lyle facility. He had survived it, he'd healed, but it had still left its mark. Angel took a menacing step in my direction, his hands at his sides like he was going to wring my neck. And that was when one of the motorcycles lifted into the air and cracked him in the side of the head. I looked back at the garage door to see Grace standing there, her eyes blazing, almost as if they were on fire with white-hot energy. I'd never seen her look that way before, her power curling in wispy tendrils of energy off her face. It was eerie. Angel pushed himself off the ground, turned to Grace, and flew at her like a torpedo. Grace! I cried as they collided and tore through a wall. Seconds later, Angel was tossed back into the room. I'd had enough. As stupid as it was, I got to my feet, dusted my pants off, and turned to Angel, ready for anything. I wanted nothing more than to bash his face in for attacking Grace. Of course, Angel was already standing by the time I reached him.
So, we meet again, Gideon,
he said, his dark eyes locked on me. That's right, motherfucker. I realized cursing had no effect on him, but it did make me feel tougher. Yeah, we meet again. My voice was shaky. I could barely feel my hands, even though they were clenched into fists, and there was a weird sensation happening in my chest and stomach. But I wasn't going to let true fear stand in my way.
Do I need to ask this?
Angel pushed his hair out of his face.
Do you really think normal like you has any chance of stopping someone like me? Do you really think that? Because the way you're standing, it seems like you've actually bought into that myth.
Rather than answer, I ran toward him with my fist drawn, aiming for his chin. A jolt of energy swept me to the side, and I turned just in time to see Grace standing behind the wall that had been blown away, her body framed by bits of pink insulation and wooden framework. "No!" I shouted as Angel flew at her again. This time, he didn't tackle her. Instead, he grabbed her and they both rocketed through the ceiling. Oblivious to the action around me and the fact that there were loads of security vehicles, two helicopters, men with guns, you name it. I ran out the garage door, my focus on Angel and Grace as they sailed higher into the sky. Like an airplane petering out, Grace would use her power to toss Angel off his trajectory, but he'd regain it and continue upward until they were hardly a spark on the horizon. Until they disappeared completely. I fell to my knees, and just as I did, three armed men approached me with their weapons drawn.
Get on the ground! On the ground! Hands behind your head! We will engage! Get on the ground, now!
I put my hands behind my head like the men told me to. Any courage or confidence I had was up in the sky right now, going God only knew how high. I watched with utter anguish as Grace and Angel spiraled back down. Angel made a crater as he hit the ground, Grace slung over his shoulder. I didn't know what he'd done to her up there, but she was completely out. Looking left, I saw Dorian standing with her paintbrush in her mouth, blood streaked across her forehead and cheeks, Veronique at her feet. Dorian lifted Veronique by the hair to show me her blood-smeared face. Eyes rolled into the back of her head.
You fucking bitch!
I scrambled back to my feet.
You double-crossing dirty... Fuck! Fuck!
I cried out as a black bag was placed over my head. My hands and legs were zip-tied, and I was roughly pushed back down. Still in shock, I stumbled forward and tried to run.
Nope.
A hand grabbed me and tossed me down again. I felt the muzzle of a gun press into the back of my neck.
Stay still,
a man growled as the weapon dug into my flesh. I was completely distraught. I felt like sobbing. I felt like raging. I felt like screaming and trying to wake from this terrible nightmare. I could barely stand when they pulled me up. My knees buckled, but the men holding me made sure I could walk. I'd been so focused on my own shock and rage that I hadn't even heard the helicopter land. Sure, I felt the wind beating against the black bag over my face, but I was hardly cognizant of the fact that the chopper was there until I was shoved inside it. It would be my first helicopter ride, and it was taken completely blindfolded.
Chapter 21 Mother
Grace!
I screamed inside my head as the helicopter lifted into the air. My chest constricted, and I felt sobs welling up in my throat, but I suppressed them. Dorian had betrayed us. She led them straight to us, and we'd fallen into their trap, the second trap we'd fallen into over the last 2 days.
I should have known better. Please, Grace, say something to me. Tell me you can hear me. Please.
Nothing. Damn it, nothing. The helicopter landed about 10 minutes later, and I was led away from the beating chopper blades. From what I could tell, which was hard to process considering my delirium, I was scanned into one room, then scanned into a second, handed off to another person, and finally led down a long hallway.
"Welcome home,"
a man said as he removed the black fabric covering my head. He was a grisly mercenary in chiseled body armor, with gray lettering that read Merc Secure across the chest. Bald, with a neatly trimmed mustache and sharp green eyes. A paid killer. There was another man with him who wore a balaclava, not unlike a Mexican DEA agent. He held a cattle prod, just in case I got out of hand.
"Where am I?"
I managed to ask, my eyes adjusting to the light.
"Move to the right so I can take off your zip cuffs."
I did as instructed, and he used a razor to cut through the plastic. The two men left, and the door locked on its own. I was in a space no larger than a closet, a white room with a metal bed and a single sheet on it, some type of military holding cell. There was a toilet completely made of plastic, and just seeing it made something in my stomach turn. At first, I thought I was going to vomit,
but it turned out to be number two. So there I was, in some secret military prison, shitting and sobbing. Some fucking life. What was worse, the space was very small, so when I finished, it stank, and I had to wallow in my own filth, literally. No matter how many times I flushed the toilet, the smell lingered. I hated myself and my weak digestive system. I hated the bright lights glaring down on me, the camera in the corner. I glanced around the room, and a sense of utter savageness came over me. Nothing to break the camera with. All I could do was pace back and forth, aware they were watching me, reeling as pure hopelessness washed over me. I don't know how long I paced for. Minutes? Hours? No idea. But my feet hurt when I finally finished. Time had come to a standstill for me, and since there was no light coming in from outside, I had no idea if it was morning or night. It has to be night, I thought. I pressed my ear to the door, hoping to get a sense of what was happening in the hallway outside. Utter silence. Grace! 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 Wake up, I whispered, sobs welling up in my chest. Ashamed to have the camera watching me cry like a little bitch, I sat on the floor and turned my back to it, brought my knees up and wrapped my arms around them as I let it all out. There were legal words for the trouble I was in, but I preferred the colloquial term. I was fucked. Royally fucked. My life was as good as over. I have to get word out, I thought, staring at the white wall. I have to let people know I've been captured. Then again, who would really give a shit if Mertzakir got me? Sure, I had some readers, but I'd be long gone, sent to a black site in Egypt or Timbuktu by the time they learned what had happened to me. My parents? They didn't even know I'd left Connecticut. Luke, definitely, but he was thousands of miles away. Grace and Veronique. They'd care, but they were just as screwed as I was. So I decided to rest. I still had that. I still had my dreams and my imagination. I don't know how long I ended up sleeping for, but the dreams I had were worth it. Dreams of Grace, Veronique, all of us in Louisiana, driving along the highway, sharing a meal in Austin, the hotel room in Stamford, the cherry blossoms. The good times. Never mind the fact that unknown enemies awaited on the periphery, ready to strike and stop us from being together, ready to retire Grace and Veronique and bury me. Never mind those enemies.
Gideon, wake up.
Grace's voice was far away, a distant whisper, a gasp of fresh air. Grace? I sat up, suddenly on high alert. No response. It had likely been a figment of my imagination. I slapped my cheeks a few times. Get it together. A slot on the door opened up and a pair of eyes peered in.
Get up, or we'll get you up,
a man growled. Why? I asked.
Because she's ready to meet you now. Get on the floor, on your knees, with your hands behind your back.
She? I did as instructed. Once I was in place, two men came into the room. One immediately cuffed me, and once they pulled me to my feet, still facing away from the door, the second one bagged my head. Is it really that big of a deal if I see things? I asked them as they shoved me into the hallway. I'm already fucked.
Looks like you're finally starting to understand what's going on here. Now keep your mouth shut,
the first man said. I recognized his voice. He was the one with the mustache and green eyes who'd put me in the holding cell to begin with. They walked me through a few rooms and eventually we stopped. After a series of beeps that sounded like some type of scan, we were allowed into another room. Still blindfolded, I was shoved into a chair, and my cuffs were attached to a chain on the floor. At least, that was what it sounded like they were doing.
She'll be here in a moment.
The fuckers left me in the room, my head still covered. I sat there a good 15 minutes, my thoughts lost in the black fabric covering my face, my shoulders hunched back slightly due to the way they'd cuffed me. The door opened, and I heard the click-clack of high heels.
"You may remove his head covering,"
a woman said,
"and leave us alone."
The black bag was ripped off my head, and my eyes twitched as they adjusted to the light.